This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Flashers, huh? What's your favorite scary movie?
not that one.
And welcome back to Microqueers. It's our sporadic queer horror roundup, and I'm Joe.
And I'm Trace, and we are discussing a returning filmmaker, by the way, Erlinger Thoradsen's The Piper, which is a modernization of The Piper of Hamelin.
Mm-hmm, you betcha. And I will say right off the top, we are going to be spoiling this, as we always do in these microqueers, and I'm going to say that, well, I like this. It's a soft recommend, if only because I found the narrative very familiar.
I am in the exact same boat. Yeah, this is a soft recommend. I think I wound up giving this a 3 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
I will confess, I was at a 2.5 for most of this film until we get to the climax, which I do think is a decent payoff.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree with that. So one of the issues that I have with this is I probably went in with some heightened expectations because we don't have a lot of films from Thoradsen, and I feel like we've been waiting for a while for something new. And I was really excited that he was going to be working with composer Christopher Young, who has done one of my favorite horror scores for Hellraiser. Mm-hmm. And I think that the score is actually really, really good. I don't know. It's just, I knew the story, and it felt like we didn't go off the beaten path. So even though there are some definite strengths in the film, overall, it felt like, okay, yeah, that was good.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think, again, a lot of the strengths here come from the technical side of things for me. I agree with you. I think Young's score is very strong here. I am assuming he composed the concerto. I don't have a confirmation on that.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, I think that's really good. I think the makeup effects on our Pied Piper are really good. He's kind of like this modernized, grumbly Freddy Krueger type character.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I see a lot of Thoradsen's visual eye here. So I think he's elevating the material. The problem is it's his material too, because he did pull double duty directing and screenwriting this movie.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I'd be curious to hear from folks if they didn't know anything about the Pied Piper, if this felt a little bit more fresh to them. You know, there were moments where I even thought, oh, I realize Batman Returns is a variation of this with the Penguin luring the children into the sewers, right?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of that. And I think also, like, you know, because this isn't getting a huge marketing push, it's not getting a very wide release. But, like, I think this is one of those movies where people might gloss over it because it kind of,
it's a little generic, especially in the advertising.
Well, it also might bring up, like, memories of, I don't know, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, or whatever this Cinderella movie that's out now, where it's like, oh, we're just, like, R-ratifying, like, popular children's fairy tales and stuff.
Right.
And I do think this is better than some of those movies, or, I'm sorry, I should be honest, how some of those movies look, because I haven't seen those movies.
Right. Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, yeah, this was fine. I agree with you. It's very, very, very familiar. But if anything, it shows that Thoradsen knows how to direct a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, not that that was ever something we really doubted, because, of course, we're huge fans of Riff. And we mostly like Into the Dark, Midnight Kiss. There's, again, some scripting stuff there that doesn't always land. But overall, his visual stuff has never been an issue.
Yeah, I will say, though, because, you know, he's going back into child territory here. I would watch his 2016 film Child Eater, because I do think that's also, I would argue, a better example of him taking, like, a fairy tale and giving it an R-rated approach. But this is him kind of returning to that sandbox for me, which I think is also why it felt more familiar, because it wasn't just, oh, we're doing the Pied Piper. Oh, the narrative is kind of something I've seen many times before, but it's also Thoradsen dipping back into this well that he did 8 years ago.
That's interesting. Yeah, I was going to ask if you had seen that. I've not seen it, but I've always been curious about it.
It's good.
Oh, okay. Good to know. But yeah, the overall takeaway definitely seemed to be, oh, okay, are we sort of doing the same thing again, albeit with different actors and a slightly different storyline?
Yeah, again, it's not a one-to-one comparison, but it is similar subject matter. But I mean, I don't know. Do you want to go through some of, like, kind of knock out some of these things that we want to discuss here and see what, if we want to elaborate?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So basically, this is the story of Melanie. She's played by Charlotte Hope. She's a single mother. She is a member of the orchestra, and she's more or less trying to prove herself to a hard-ass orchestra conductor who is played by the late Julian Sands. And I'm interested to hear your take on his performance, because at times I thought he was doing exactly what he needed to be doing, and other times he looked a little lost to me.
I was going to say the exact same thing. So this is obviously one of his last films. I don't know if he has anything else in the can or if this is, in fact, his last film that will be released. The film is dedicated to his memory, of course. Yeah, I mean, I agree. The character is just, you know, really intense composer, which, I mean, is not really a new archetype of character, but he's also not much of the focus. Like, he's here pretty much just to yell at Charlotte Hope's Melanie and get her to turn this piece in on time.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're trying to raise money for the orchestra, and Melanie puts her ass on the line and says, okay, well, I can probably get this mysterious children's concerto from my now dead mentor, who is the opening kill of the film, in a sequence I quite liked. You know, like a lot of sequences in the film, you more or less know exactly what's going to happen before it begins, but the execution, where this woman just goes up in flames trying to burn these papers, pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. It's a decent cold open. Again, I mean, it does feel very familiar, but I agree with you. I think the execution here elevates the material just ever so slightly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Melanie tells Gustafsson that she's going to get it, and part of the reason that she wants to do this is she's also trying to impress her preteen daughter, Zoe, who is hearing impaired. It's a recent thing because we learn about how she's adjusting to the hearing aids and that kind of stuff. And of course, if you know the story of the Pied Piper, you can anticipate that Zoe's going to play an important part in the narrative. So I do think that this child actress, Ava O'Flanagan, is doing a pretty good job. I mean, again, it's a typical child in distress. She's got a neighbor, Colin, who is played by Oliver Savelle, who is a bit more precocious, and I wasn't unhappy to see him get disappeared midway through the film.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? You know, I mean, I will say, so Hope and O'Flanagan, I like their scenes together, but yeah, this is just kind of another case of overworked, stressed out mother with a child with a disability. That disability will play a major part in the climax of the film and the overall storyline, because of course, yes, this is a movie about music, so it's very by the numbers, but I do think these actors do a really good job of selling the material.
Yeah. So Melanie ends up going to this dead mentor's house. She has a run-in with her very persnickety sister, Alice, who is played by Pippa Winslow. Could have taken a bit more of this character because she's a bit of a bitch.
Well, she's also, I mean, it's so funny. So everyone, you know, we have these notes that Joe and I share when we cover these, and Joe puts next to her the Harbinger. That is kind of all she is. I was happy to see her come back.
Yes.
But it's only to say, I told you so, instead of, but she didn't, though. She didn't say, if you play this, this Pied Piper will bust out of the person playing the song and kidnap a bunch of children.
Yeah, it's like, I get it. You were a child when this happened, and your sister had a very challenging life as a result where she tried to protect you from it, but also, bitch, open your mouth and warn me properly.
Yeah, don't just, like, I mean, obviously, if you lock this woman out of your mansion, she's clearly gonna sneak in some broken window.
Mm-hmm. I will say, this is not the first set piece, because obviously the opening kill is its own thing, but I quite liked it when Melanie sneaks in. The house has a lot of atmosphere. She ends up finding the pages of the concerto, but it's missing the third movement, but there is a tape that she can listen to. And, you know, just like any kind of audio interference in a horror film, you listen to the tape, you don't curse yourself, you're fucked. But I like how Thoradsen does the eyes where they kind of turn a little bit gray when people get stunned and they're taken over by the music. And then we punctuate this with a crow just eating shit through the window.
Yeah, Absolutely. I think all that was really great. But then, again, this middle stretch of the film, we're just kind of like, okay, Melanie wants to finish the concerto. She starts to realize something's going wrong. But by that point, you know, her flautist or Piper rival has already gotten a hold of the material. So he's like, I'm going to do it instead. It, again, we've seen it before.
Sure. Yeah, this is Franklin. He's played by Philip Christopher. And I feel like, much as we said with Julian Sands' conductor, you know, he's here to be a source of conflict, a little bit of an adversary for Melanie. I either needed more of him or less of him, because this film has too many little parts and not enough fully fleshed out characters. And I almost wish that it either had have just been her with Gustafsson, the conductor, played by Julian Sands, or her with this guy, and we can just like really dig into it, because neither one of them made as big of an impact as I think the film needed them to.
Yeah, I almost think, because, and you know, it's so funny mentioning Christopher Young in this, because he also scored one of my favorite films, which is Sam Raimi's Drive Me to Hell. Ooh. But the Philip character reminded me a lot of the Stu character in Drive Me to Hell, you know, who's the kiss ass to David Paymer's boss. And while I'm happy that Philip gets definitely more of a comeuppance here,
I feel like
we hear about him a lot before we actually meet him.
Yeah, he's, I guess, a presence in the film, but he's not on screen.
Yeah, so I almost wish he would have been like a constant fly in Gustafsson's ear to make him more of like a threat. I mean, again, he's not a real threat, but like the threat to Melanie's career, you know?
Exactly, yeah, because she's sort of contending from all sides and only realizing too late, oh shit, this Pied Piper music thing is more of a big deal than I realized.
Well, and I think there's a really interesting like thematic through line going here of like, oh, okay, like, you know, an artist consumed by their work and like how it kind of like drives them mad. And we kind of do that a little bit with Melanie, but then I don't think it's really followed through well enough. And again, I almost wish that Gustafsson was more in the know, I think, about what the concerto was going to do. I think that would have made his character more interesting to me.
Yeah, have someone be a little nefarious, because he really just truly seems to say, oh, well, she promised me she could get it and we need it because this thing is hemorrhaging money. And that's really his only motivation. It's not, oh, okay, I'm actively trying to plot against this woman.
Which is an okay motivation. I mean, again, it makes sense. It just doesn't make for a particularly compelling, oh, I was going to say villain, but he's not even really the villain of the film.
No, I said adversary. I'm sticking with that.
Yeah, I think that's really good. But yeah, so linking all of this to the climax. So yeah, you know, we have Melanie's kind of like helpful, like music teacher friend, Philip, played by Alexis Rodney, who's like, hey, let me listen to this and help you. And also her friend Nancy, played by Kate Nichols, who's the aforementioned Colin's mother. They both hear the music. They both have bad things happen to them. In Philip's case, he drives a pin into his ear, and Nancy jumps off the stage and breaks her leg.
Yeah, and both of these sequences, I think, are good. My big issue with them is that the moment they begin, you know exactly where they're going. The biggest surprise in both of these set pieces was that neither of these characters die.
I was really surprised by that, too, to the point where I actually thought we were killing these kids. So I was moderately, not it wasn't a movie ruiner for me, but I was moderately disappointed when all these kids walk out of the door at the end of the movie.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So the finale is, of course, the staging of this concerto, because, of course, Franklin has managed to complete the third movement. And by performing this, we end up creating a door to this other world that the Piper can come through. Mm-hmm. That looks really cool. And he takes all of the children from the audience through the door to this other world by the lake with the castle. I have mixed feelings about the FX execution of how this looked. I found it slightly off-putting, but not in a, ooh, that's intriguing. It was more, oh, I don't really know about this kind of way.
Wait, so you mean about the Piper's world, where it's like, we almost have a filter effect on the screen where it looks like we're looking through water?
Yeah, I appreciated that we were trying to do something different to make it very clear we're in a whole other place, but it wasn't my favorite.
I chalk this up to budget. I mean, again, I think this looks fine for what a straight-to-streaming release would look like for me. But I think the kudos here should be to Franklin's, like, Piper explosion as this thing busts out of his skin. Granted, in any like shoddiness in the effects is hidden pretty well, I think, by, you know, we have like a strobe light going on in the auditorium as this happens. But I think all this actually looks really, really good. And to the point where I wasn't like, oh, we're doing a strobe light to hide shoddy effects. I actually did add to the atmosphere of the sequence.
I agree. Yeah. And even seeing the entire audience almost stupefied, except the children, even Gustafsson gets his head crushed by the Piper. Would have taken just a little bit more gore if we could have had it. That I'm also going to chalk up to budgetary constraints.
Yeah, we hear it. The Foley work is good on it. But yeah, we don't, we cut before we actually see it happen. Which again, I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of a meh death for that character. Maybe I'm putting in my like, oh, it's one of Julian Sands' final roles. Like, I wish we had something more for his demise.
Yeah, you want something big for this actor who is so renowned and who, yeah, isn't a huge part of this film, so you want him to go out with a bang.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, this is just kind of par for the course for these types of movies, I think.
Sure, yeah. And then, you know, Melanie and Zoe have to do their dueling flute. I've had to say the word flute or flutist multiple times on different podcasts in the last week. And let me tell you, I think I'm mispronouncing it. I think there's a proper word I'm not using. And also, fuck, why are movies doing this to me?
I think, you know, it's so funny because in the Evil Dead game, there's an enemy that you can summon as the demon that's just the flutist demon. But I kept calling them flautist because is there a difference between flautist and flutist?
Oh, my God. Yes. A flautist is a person who plays the flute but flaunts it better.
But yeah, no, I think this climax did bump this movie up a half star for me. I quite like the climax, even though, again, yeah, I can see the kind of like budgetary seams going on here.
Sure.
What I didn't really appreciate was this coda. No. Where we're like, oh, it feels like a sequel tease of sorts. But it's like, yeah, you know, 3 months later, we do a flash forward. Melanie seems fine. Again, her friends are fine-ish. And Zoe is auditioning and she's still possessed, I guess, by the Piper. Like, is he in her, or maybe she's under his spell? Nevertheless, that's what we're left to go off of.
Yeah, this felt anticipated. I had a feeling that this was coming, you know, as soon as we jumped ahead. I was like, well, obviously we're going to end with something, but it was just too predictable. And frankly, it doesn't entirely make sense because the whole point of that climax is that we shut that door, we got rid of him. So why would she still be possessed? And I'm sure there's probably a whole mythology that we could unpack in a sequel, but it didn't feel strong enough for me.
Ooh, actually, I'm sorry, I skipped it, but what do you think about the Piper's demise with the rats busting out of his body and, like, consuming him? Because I did like that quite a bit.
Oh, I did like that as well. Yeah, because we have these recurring rats throughout the film. You know, there's a good jump scare with Colin where he finds a rat under his bed and then he throws a t-shirt on it and then the t-shirt starts to come towards him.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that we were paying it off. And yeah, if you know the story, then this is an appropriate finale for our monster creature.
Agreed. But yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, we know that Thorsen has a Rift remake being planned or worked on or in pre-production. So I think this is a good, you know, stepping stone to see what he does next. I think he does a really good job directing this. I just wish his screenplay was a bit more unique.
Adventurous.
Yeah. Like, I wish there were some swings taken here because I didn't have a lot of swings taken in this movie.
No. If you're looking for something that isn't going to challenge you too much, but you're just looking for something kind of solid to put on, this is a safe bet.
Agreed. I totally agree. So, check it out. Support queer filmmakers. And, let us know what you thought of this one, everyone.
Yeah.
But until next time, we can cross out the Piper.
Indeed. And cross out microqueers.